My name is Linda Allen, and if you're looking for the healing session, this isn't it. It's next door. But this one is on Eve and Lilith. Subtitle, Whose Daughter Are We? A Journey into Women's Spirituality. My name's Linda Allen, and I'm here as a musician and also as a teacher, as I've been a number of times before. But it's been just in more recent years that I've started taking on doing classes as well as doing concerts. And I approach this more as an artist and a layperson than I do as a theologian. But I've become very excited about the subjects, particularly around women's spirituality, and so I just wanted to share some of what I've been learning and hope it can enrich you as much as I've been enriched. But a lot of what I have been, or sort of the journey I've been on, are on these reading lists that I'm passing around. So I think we're having a session tonight in the forum on women's spirituality, and I think that's really... Well, it isn't on women's spirituality. What was it called? Is the church too feminine? That's right. My image immediately came that it was on women's spirituality. Of course, it isn't. Is the church too feminine? Well, that's a really excellent question, and I thought this session would be a good introduction. Because for some people, the whole idea of woman-affirming images, of a more feminist spirituality is still quite new. And it's something I've been exploring for about 20-some years now. And the blossoming of literature that's happened in about the past decade is quite extraordinary. And if it is a topic that you want to explore more, I think that it has certainly shaken the church to its roots. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think women more and more are wanting to come into their own voice, are needing to find images that they feel strongly relate more, or come out of their own lives. And I think it's all there. It has always been there. It's been so covered up. I'm a strong believer in stories. I love stories. And I think that stories are a way that we, as a culture, tend to define ourselves. And coming out of the Judeo-Christian culture, then certainly many of those images, whether we've ever had any relationship to the church or consider ourselves Christian or not, a whole lot of the images that have affected us deeply come out of that tradition. And I think there are a few, and those stories that we hear shape how we think about ourselves, think about what our role is in our culture, in our society, and it has a whole lot to do with how we think about ourselves. And I think there are few images more pervasive than that of Eve. So we're going to start there. And the way I want to start is I'd like you all to think about, when you think about the story of Eve, I just want us to tell the story. Maybe we can have a volunteer here who will just tell the story of Adam and Eve as you remember it. And don't forget if you forget, I mean, don't worry if you forget the details. We're not after the, you know, accurate, the most biblically accurate rendition here. I'm interested in what you remember. So do we have any volunteers who are just going to tell us what's the story of Adam and Eve? Yes.
Well, from what I remember, Adam was created first, I guess, and he was created of Adam, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. And they were joined together in the Garden of Eden, and for whatever reason, they fell from... grace, whatever you want to call it, but they fell and everything became very dirty. In my remembrance, the body was seen as very dirty, mm-hmm. and they had shame and they had sin instead of beauty and love. Mm-hmm. It just kind of spun off into that and turned crazy, I guess.
Okay. Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Some other tellings of the story.
Well, there's a part that I remember about God saying, don't eat of this particular tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Mm-hmm. And the serpent comes along and persuades Eve to eat of that tree. And then she persuades Adam, and that's how they get kicked out.
Okay. Flaming sword. So there's a serpent, and there's a tree. Okay. What else do you remember? More parts of the story.
I think that she was created out of one of Adam's rib bones or something.
Okay.
That's one thing that I heard about.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another piece of it. What?
Oh, all of a sudden they recognized that they were naked, and so they put leaves on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other parts may have been left out of the story?
There was fruit on the tree. It was a fruit tree, an apple that she took.
Okay. All right.
And it was a beautiful garden with everything that they needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I want you to close your eyes just for a minute. And I want you to go back, as far back as you can remember. And try and remember when you first heard that story. And try and remember how you felt about that story. How did that story make you feel as a young girl, as a growing woman? How did that story affect you? Okay, do you want to just open your eyes and take a deep breath and just think about that for a minute? Somebody like to volunteer to share what they...
I questioned it. I questioned the whole aspect of the two people forming the many. And I questioned the aspect of the female being the persuader, the evil, taking Adam down with her. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't buy it. Even as a child, I questioned it very heavily.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other?
Yeah, I also didn't know how a woman could come from a rib. I was like, I don't understand that, Mom. And she said, well, it's in the Bible. And what was hard for me too was, you know, I believe because that's what they're telling me, but I was like, well, how can a woman talk to a snake? Mm-hmm. I didn't get that either.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I was thinking about that like a couple of months ago. You know, it'd been for so long that I hadn't thought about it. But I thought, well, maybe the reason why I'm afraid of snakes is maybe has to do with that story. I mean, there could be other reasons too, just because my mom's afraid of them too, and maybe somehow, I don't know, that came to me or I had a bad experience, but maybe it was from that story that I'm afraid of. But I still like apples.
Okay.
The Bible didn't say it was an apple.
No.
The tree of fruit, that's another myth. Uh-huh. And there were two versions of creation. Only one was from the rib. There's another one. And why do we always repeat one story when we want the one?
Good. We'll get into that point. We'll talk about that more. But that's right.
I think too, I've done so many studies of it and see more and more meaning in that story. But I think I'll admit as a child, society as a whole was... Eve ate the apple, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow convinced Adam that it was her fault.
Mm-hmm.
And they were driven out.
Yeah.
Later on we find out, yeah, they ate the tree of knowledge, and they gained God's knowledge. And since they knew the difference between good and evil now,
mm-hmm.
he said go out in the world and take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But the simplified version was the one that the world gobbled up, or you heard when you were younger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And kind of said, if that's what they say is true, I'll believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't believe it.
It's
like, it's not right.
This is probably somewhat when you were born too, as to how, if you saw this as, or what kind of family you were born into. Did you see this more as mythological? Was it something that even you heard? But what I think my point is, whether or not
you heard that story or believed it as myth or believed it as absolute truth in the way it was told, how, I guess my question goes a little deeper. How did it affect your view of yourself as a girl, as a woman in this culture?
It always made me feel like the underdog, like a second-class citizen. Like I am going to be the brunt of the blame. I will have to accept blame because he can't be wrong. I'm responsible.
I was tempted. That was, I think, my first realization of temptation.
Well, we were weak.
And you were the temptress, too. Right.
Although I had a different reaction because I, at some maybe a little slightly later age, but I think it made me angry enough that I was very rebellious. Mm-hmm. Because if somebody says to me, "This is a tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and you can't eat it," I'm going to eat that tree. You can say whatever you want, sir, but I think. Mm-hmm. And it really made me tough and maybe put the label of rebel on that. Yeah. But maybe it's not appropriate that that have to be a rebellious act. But I almost, I reacted with anger, kind of doing purposely contrary to what the teaching was about. Hey, I don't like I mean, she was right there and this is wrong.
So you didn't like what they were trying to teach you. Right. So you don't. You feel like maybe you would have been influenced by that or made to feel bad about yourself or in some way had you not rebelled and said
right.
No.
I think it forced me into a rebellion position about it.
Yeah.
I mean, putting yourself in this, if I was sitting in that situation wandering around doing, enjoying the scenery, but there was something there that was of more depth and interest and power and something. Yeah. I would go. I just personally.
We'll get to Lilith in a minute. I think you'll identify. You're going to like Lilith.
Right. But I think there was a negative connotation put on that I felt badly that I would do so. Mm-hmm. And I just had to be more rejecting the whole story than perhaps otherwise it would have needed to be.
I think the other people? Something about this?
I think just for me, sort of on the same lines, but more focusing on that Adam was first and then Eve, being like, dang, the boys went after us again, we're going to have to find something else to balance it out, because I didn't buy into that either, but it's like, well, there's something else they've got against us, and just sort of the sense that, well, it doesn't seem fair that Adam was first and Eve was second and just came from his rib. And
I remember one of my favorite jokes was, when God made Adam, he was just practicing.
And I loved that.
And I think what I loved about that was the same thing. It was the rebel in me that said, I'm not going to buy this. But I think part of it is, even with the part of me that said, I'm not going to buy this, what I recognize too is how often women have felt alienated from the church, alienated from so, and in our culture as being not male, that we were the ones who were not in charge. We were secondary. Clearly, we were supposed to be submissive. There were so many images that came out of the context that story came out of, and the way it was interpreted, that has come down to us, and has reaped a fair amount of destruction in our lives. And I think it's only when, and I think this just gives, I think we all can probably agree on what has happened to women or the images of women, but I think what it helps me to do is to put it in the context of this story. So just a few things. What does that story teach us? This is a new thing to have to use reading glasses. I am not adjusting to growing older. Okay, elements of the story. Eve was Adam's wife. She was created from his rib. So the image is clear. A male God created Adam in his image. Eve was an afterthought. She was to keep the man company, to service him sexually, and to keep the garden neat and clean while Adam and God carried on the important business of running the world. 2, Adam told them not to eat the fruit. The snake, this is a very simplified version, but it's what we remember. The snake tricked Eve, and she ate it anyway. Then she seduced Adam, and he ate it too. They were naked and put on clothes. So what this means, Eve was morally weak and more susceptible to the wiles of the devil than the man was. She was the first to surrender to temptation. She violated God's law and then seduced the man. It was her sexuality that caused the downfall of all humankind. 3, Eve was bad and God punished her. Pain and suffering are the lot of a woman's life. We continue to bear the brunt of Eve's act of defiance and her twofold punishment. We are to be submissive to men, and we experience pain and suffering in childbirth. Thus, Eve's shame and guilt are passed on to all women. Listen to how that was interpreted by Tertullian. And Tertullian was one of the early church fathers. Here we go. And he wrote this, 2nd century church. Okay. In his essay on the apparel of women, this is what he said. And do you know that you are each an Eve? The sentence of God on the sex of yours lives in this age. The guilt must of necessity live too. You are the devil's gateway. You are the unsealer of that forbidden tree. You are the first deserter of divine law. You are she who persuaded him who the devil was not valiant enough to attack. You destroyed so easily God's image, man. On account of your desert, that is death, even the Son of God had to die. So, but it goes on. Augustine, let's see, and he was one of the greatest teachers considered of Western Christianity. And sexual desire, sinful, okay. Infants, these were some of the points that he extrapolated from that. Because, of course, the concept goes back to original sin. And that is a big part of it. Sexual desire is sinful. Infants are infected from the moment of conception with a disease of original sin. Adam's sin corrupted the whole of nature. And when this keeps cycling back to women, that somehow it's our fault, I think we need, when we truly absorb what that has meant to us, I think we need to think about the story and think, is there a way we can tell the story again? By looking deeper at the story as it was told, by understanding better the context, and I think a good beginning point was what you pointed out, that there are two versions. And in fact, well, here's one question right away. Did you know that Eve had a daughter? Did you know that Eve had daughters? But it's in there. It's in Genesis 5. And yet somehow we don't notice that. You know, what does that say? And of course, they weren't given names. So what does this say about the context in which this was written and the culture and the society out of which it was written? And if this is, in the way that this comes down, the way that women have felt about ourselves, then if God is male, which seems to certainly be the message from the creation story on, here's a few things, a little inventory. If God is male, then men are active participants in life, and I am an onlooker. Then masculine qualities are more valuable than feminine ones. If God is male, then I am incapable of choosing my own direction or path in life without his assistance. I wait for men to clue me in on what's right for me. They have the natural abilities that I lack. If God is male, then men were made in God's image, body and all, and I was not. My body is other and defective. It is never enough. I compulsively eat and then compulsively exercise. My body bears the brunt of my self-hatred. I never saw a god who looks like me, with breasts and the roundness of a woman. The sex goddesses, like Marilyn Monroe, were created by men and do not look like me at all. If God is male, then men are gods, and I defer to men in work situations. I back down in any arguments with a man. I get quiet. Boy, does this sound familiar. In mixed groups, allowing men to dominate the discussion. If God is male, then men are gods, and I diminish my life and quiet my intelligence so that male co-workers, lovers, and even professors won't be threatened by me. A relationship with a man is to be highly desired. He becomes a god. His needs are more important than my children's, my friends', and my own. I set aside my own life in order to pursue men, and then consider it my duty to meet all of their needs, sexual, emotional, and physical. Just as my mother dedicated her life to my father's needs, he was the man of our family. Men's interests are more important. It goes on and on. They are superior. I am inferior. This is a book where I'm getting some of this. I highly recommend A God Who Looks Like Me, Discovering a Woman Affirming Spirituality, Patricia Lynn Riley. So if this is the story and we think about telling it again, let's go back to that Genesis story. Okay. Here's the first, Genesis 1, 26 through 28. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he them. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." That's the first version. And then the second version, and that emphasizes a simultaneous creation. Male and female created he them. It isn't anything about the rib and all of that. Now, then the next version, woman from the man's rib. Genesis 2, 18, 20 through 23. Then the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will provide a partner for him." God then created the animals and birds and gave the man the task of naming them. But for the man, no partner had yet been found. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, "This is the bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." In the first account, men and women were created simultaneously. Both were to have dominion over the earth. Now, that's a whole other subject we can get into. We won't go into that. In the second, woman was created from the man and named by him. The second account has been favored throughout the Hebrew Christian history. Its dominance reflects centuries of male control of the teaching, preaching, and interpretive tasks of the church. From the male point of view, it makes perfect sense. From a woman's perspective, it was a tragic choice. A myth passed on from one generation to another in song, story, and image, convincing generation after generation of girl children of their inferiority and limiting their dreams. What do you think of that? The fact that there were, first of all, two accounts, and they came from separate sources of the creation that then wound up there. I found that really interesting. I hadn't realized that. We had a choice, and I think this is what, in the scholarship that I've been reading, how often when there was a choice, whether it was the turn of a phrase, the meaning of a word, for instance, El Shaddai, as I understand it, one interpretation was God of the breasts. And yet there was another interpretation which was not as accurate, which was all-powerful one or something like that. I've forgotten now. And we completely lost the fact that El Shaddai was a feminine image of God. And this has happened so often. In one wonderful book, I mean, there are so many, but The Divine Feminine is one book, The Biblical Imagery of God as Female. What has passed down through so many hymns, through so many readings, through so many versions of the Bible, it isn't even that the imagery isn't there. It's just that it wasn't pointed out. It didn't come out. In this one wonderful little book, she goes through and truly explores deeply these different images. But just a quick overview. The Godhead is a woman in the process of giving birth. God is a nursing mother. God's other maternal activities. God is midwife, the Shekinah. Christ as female pelican. God as mother bear, the God of Naomi. God as female homemaker. God as female beloved. Baker woman, mother eagle, mother hen, dame wisdom. They're all here. Then where did this all-powerful image of the male God, how that has so dominated our thinking and consciousness?
Where does it say that God is male?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So they were formed both male and female in the image of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't want to talk too much, but there's a few songs I want to do too, and I don't want to run out of time. Oh, I'm doing fine. Yeah. Gee, yeah. All right. Yeah, I have to remember where I put the capo. One thing that has been, I think, very healing to me as a woman. Somewhere. Where did I put the cable? I thought I left it out, so I could. Excuse me, just a minute.
It's wandering around here somewhere.
Look,
the women
I had it just a minute ago because I was rehearsing with it, so it couldn't have gone too far. It got buried there. Okay. So one of the amazing things to me is that how somehow we were sold the idea that the Creator, God, would be male. You know, that somehow this image has always been with me, that this man with a big white beard was the Creator moving across the water. And as I started exploring again the other meanings of some of these words, and thinking, of course, you know, who would give birth to the universe but a more feminine aspect of God? And I think when I think of heresy, which I think I grew up with a great heresy, as much as I thought I didn't, the heresy being that we could in any sense contain who God is into any one image, and yet I grew up with one very singular and very narrow image, which really limited my own spirituality and my own development as a woman. So to broaden that out and to understand that there is no one image, not a female one either, that there is no one image that can begin to contain the God Spirit or the Creator God. And so I found it was really healing to start thinking of the Creator God giving birth to the world, that became a much more feminine image. And that's the one that came in this song. It's called Woman Spirit. Out over the land. One more too that I want to sing for you. There are, and I think when I talk about female images of God, or the feminine face of God, or the many, many woman-affirming spirituality, all of those different terms, I don't in any way want to take away from the fact that there are very many women, and maybe many of us at different times of our lives, who find male images very comforting and very healing. And I think for some, that will always be their image, and it works. And I think that's fine. I think for many people, that image doesn't work, and in fact, is destructive and limiting. And for me, I think it's at various times. I think Jesus' image, you know, as a male, as the closest one to me at a real hard time when I was growing up, that was always and continues to be a very healing, affirming image. God with a male voice at different times in my life was very important to hear. You know, that was also healing at a time when I needed. I think with some women in their relationships to their fathers, if they had a really wonderful relationship with their father, it may be that God easily wore a male face. And if they had a terrible relationship with their father, they may also have needed this Father God who was an alternative to that, the image of their own father, who was not loving and kind or any of those qualities. So I would not want in any way, by talking about a woman, am I making that clear? By talking about a woman affirming a spirituality, I do not at all want to eliminate the male or the masculine images. If they work for you, bless it, it's fine. This is why. I guess I struggled for many, many years to find ways to express why it was that when I went to church and heard the male imagery and the male language, the masculine language and the different images, how alienated I felt. You know, it was this sort of almost nameless feeling. It's like, I don't know why I'm feeling so bad about this, but this is not working. They're not speaking to me somehow. And it took me over 20 years to finally be able to put it together in a song to try and begin to understand. But all you can do is talk from your own story, you know. This is a traditional hymn tune you may recognize. It's from the Lutheran Book of Worship, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. God, I know you as a spirit blowing through. Thank you. Well, if we think about retelling these stories, I'm going to read a bit again, because I've so liked this woman's writing. What do you think? Okay, we're going to introduce a new character to the cast of characters here. And I first heard this story. Patricia Riley came to Bellingham, where I live, and spoke at the bookstore. And the story she told just so captured me. It comes from the Mishrash, I believe. It's the rabbinical storytelling tradition. So that if things seem left out in the traditional tellings or in the text, sometimes they will begin, they'll tell a story about to kind of fill in the blanks. And this becomes part of a whole tradition that is also preserved, though it isn't from the Bible. It's kind of the explanations. And one of the confusions is, why were there two different versions of the creation story? So the rabbis, and this is ancient, this goes way back, the rabbis decided that the reason was that Adam had a first wife. I bet you didn't know that. And her name was Lilith. Now let me read the way that Patricia tells the story of Lilith. According to the rabbis,
and here, back to the glasses.
According to the rabbis, the breath of life and the dust of earth formed me and Adam. This is as though Lilith were speaking the story. We were created from the same source, so I expected full equality with him. They were made from the very same clay at the same time. He did not agree with me on that and other matters. He demanded that I serve him and that I lie beneath him when we made love. I was outraged. With the help of the name that is not to be spoken, I flew away. I vanished into thin air and settled at the Red Sea. Adam complained to God, who sent three angels after me. Their attempts to capture me were fruitless. I preferred living alone to life with a man. My story is very simple. Remembering my former glory before I was swallowed into the rabbi's commentary, I refused to be mistreated by man or God. I did what any self-respecting woman would have done. I said, enough is enough, and I left. But you should hear the names they've called me and the stories they've told about me over the centuries. Here are a few. They call me spinster because I live alone and am perfectly content. I refuse to allow men to hold me in check. This they cannot understand, so I am called spinster. They call me night hag, not to be confused with ugly, mind you. Some thought my daughters and me so beautiful and so expert at lovemaking that after an experience with us, a man was never again satisfied with mortal women. They call me whore, harlot, and seducer. Celibate monks tried to keep me away by sleeping with their hands over their genitals, clutching a crucifix. Men say I distract them from their progress toward personal salvation. Eve is the wife, the faithful woman. I am a seducer. They call me tormentor of men. Although my story disappeared from the Bible, my daughters, the Lilim, are said to have haunted men for thousands of years. Well into the Middle Ages, Jewish men were manufacturing magic charms to keep away the Lilim. We supposedly appear at night and exert magical powers over young men. They said we caused them nocturnal emissions. Bet you didn't know where they came from. Woven into my reputation are men's deepest fears of impotence and weakness. All that I represent threatens them, so they call me names. They call my refusal to be submissive and subordinate rebelliousness. They call my assertiveness in taking care of myself bitchiness. They call my independence of men unfeminine. They call my sexuality unconnected to a husband unnatural. I am tired of their names. Woman, is it any wonder you too have feared me? They have convinced you all that I represent that is evil, unnatural, and unfeminine. Is it any wonder that you exile me from within you? So the story of creation takes a very interesting twist. with the presentation of Lilith, because we have Eve, and if we see Eve in the most positive light, she was came from the tradition of the mother of all being. She was the creator. She was the womb, the nurturing, and Lilith was. Let me do this a little bit. Here we go. Read it from here, because she says it so well. Eve and Lilith. Lilith represents our capacity for independent, assertive action. Eve, the mother of all living, represents our intimate involvement in the origins of life. In a world that prefers men, the fullness of our power as both nurturers and achievers is feared. We've been allowed access to only a portion of our power. If we choose to be involved with the origins of life through our role as child-bearer and nurturer, we are denied full economic and social equality. If we choose to exert our intellect, initiate our dreams, and move into the world with ambition, we have had to deny the nurturing mother within us. The connection to our original wholeness has been severed. It is time for women to integrate both aspects of themselves once again, their Eve-like nurturing qualities and their Lilith-like assertive qualities. So here's a little dialogue. Eve shouts, "I am the mother of all living, culmination of creation. I hold and nurture life within me. Welcoming is my womb, nurturing my love. In me you are enclosed and sustained." Lilith speaks, "I am the rebellious first woman, powerful its thrust in the fullness of time. I push life from me. In me you exert, initiate, and move." In one voice, they speak across the centuries. We were women divided, now we are one. I love this. Let me hear some comments from you. What do you think? Had you heard of Lilith? Had you heard of that story? And in what way had it maybe come to you? Had any of you heard about, I think more, if you were in the Jewish tradition, I think that you would more likely have heard of Lilith. And the story would have come down more as the hag. Just as out of our tradition, Mary Magdalene came down as a whore. There's nothing in the Bible that says Mary was a whore, but that's the tradition that has come down to us somehow. And Lilith, too, kind of got that reputation, because when you have strong characters in the Bible, so often don't they get that reputation? Eve becomes the opposite of Mary. And Eve starts representing everything evil, so that the stereotypes biblically come down as either a saint or a whore. You know, where are we as real women? Well, I've talked entirely too much. I would love to hear some of your comments.
I think where I first heard Lilith alluded to, C.S. Lewis alludes to her in one of the Chronicles of Narnia, and I think that's the heritage of the witch.
Isn't she? Uh-huh. She is the witch.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't realized that. I haven't read that in a while, but I'll go read
it.
Yeah. That out.
I think you're right. I was wondering where I heard that thing before.
I have a Jewish friend who is a strong feminist, and she's very, very involved in her synagogue. And she told me the story of Lilith, but I've kind of forgotten. I don't know how I could have.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. I think I'll forget it again.
Did Adam dump her?
No, she left him.
She left him.
Yeah, she chose. He wanted her, and he said, "Hey, God said I'm supposed to be in charge." Mm-hmm. And I look like him. You know, mm-hmm. So and she wouldn't buy it. Mm-hmm. And what I heard was that you were not to speak the name of God, particularly in the Jewish tradition, that still is true. And so she spoke the name, knowing that she would then, and it was unclear whether she flew out or was cast out, but she left. But then God tried to retrieve her by sending angels after her, and she wouldn't come back.
Okay.
So that's the way I heard it.
Now, does she speak of daughters? Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, of course, they sort of mysteriously appear, as they often do. But yeah, Lilith apparently has daughters. That's definitely part of the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what's interesting is we didn't know Eve did.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that I wanted to read to you, too, about Eve's daughters. Another wonderful set of books. There are three And these have probably been among the most important books to me. Woman Wisdom, Woman Witness, Woman Word, Feminist Lectionary, and Psalter. And they're by Miriam Therese Winter. And there's one, none of these are in the bookstore, unfortunately, at Holden. But they do have another one of hers. I think it's Woman Song or something, I think like that. But she is a wonderful poet. And because so much of how I am moved comes through poetry and music and psalms, and she is one of the finest writers of that. Plus, she's a fine scholar because she knows the stories and she puts them in context. You know, she will go through each of the women of the Bible and she will put them in context of the story and put the writing, and then she will connect it with a song, with a psalm of her own writing. And I think it's this art. Taking the story and then bringing it to life through art is, to me, it's a way that cuts through. It gets right to the heart for me. So these three books I just can't recommend highly enough for exploring the women of the Bible. But let me get to Eve's Daughters. Here we go. Yeah, here it's in apparently Genesis 5, 3 and 4. When Adam had lived 130 years, he became the father of a son in his likeness and named him Seth. After he became the father of Seth and lived for 800 years, and he and Eve had other sons and daughters. That's all we know. Mm-hmm. And she went on to write quite a moving psalm for Eve's daughters. Do we have time? Like to hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's do that. And then you'll have a little feeling of her writing. And this almost sounds like it should be sung. It sounds like there should be a tune with it. In fact, I'm going to pass it around. It's two pages, and just read each section, you know, and then pass it to the next person.
The first females to break the waters of Eve and Earth were Eve's daughters. Tell their story, sing their praises, give thanks for the hope their memory raises.
In the beginning, on that day, in the annals of the old Kazori, women emerged from the primal waters of one woman's womb, Eve's daughters.
In the dream time when life began, God made woman and God made man. In our image, yes, I will send her, replicas of our female gender.
Daughters danced in the new creation, learned about love and dedication, opened their wombs and brought to birth goodness and strength to people the earth.
But no one remembered what had been when the daughters of Eve ushered life in. We lost their laughter, lost their tears, lost their memory to the years.
Look to the stars and see there reflected the dreams of the daughters as yet undetected. Flickers of hope, a flash of their flame, and there in the stars you will read their name.
Feed the wind on your fingers and face and hear in its whisper the delicate trace of the song of the daughters, the primeval theme of the fullness of life in the time of the dream.
See in the moonlight the warmth of their faces and feel in the waters their sensuous traces. The lace of the spider has strands of their hair. There are signs of the daughters of Eve everywhere.
In fields and forests among the flowers, where they lifted their spirits and sharpened their powers, they dreamed of a future where women would be just as happy as they were, and yes, just as free.
Through the waters of life, all women are Eve's daughters. Look to the future and dare to believe will recover the spirit of the daughters of Eve.
I think that one thing that has brought me closer, or brought me back to the Christian tradition, has certainly been discovering these stories. I think it's one has been being able to image God in different ways than I had originally. And the other has been learning new versions of old stories and finding out what had been left out. And finding out, and some of them are pretty horrendous, some of the stories of what happened to some of the women, but also important to hear those stories. And some of them are amazing models that I had never heard about and had never been lifted up to me as any kind of models. So these books have helped correct that a great deal, and it has brought me fully back to where I can once again say freely and openly and start feeling myself as standing in line with my ancestors as part of a tradition and feeling fine about calling myself a part of that Christian tradition again, because it now is feeling more like my tradition. I want to close with one song, and Jen, would you maybe help me? This is my daughter Jennifer, and if maybe you would help me sing Lay It Down.
Okay.
Before we do, are there any other comments, questions?
I just had a comment because I think in Palestine, the culture that was being displaced when the Hebrew people came back from Egypt was a feminine-based female goddess religion. And in a lot of Europe, the religion that was being displaced by Christianity under Constantine and the Romans was a female-based religion. So in order to, distinguish and declare all that was there in the land already, that was kind of native to the land, as bad, so that the Christians could come and convert everybody to Christianity, there had to be this, the women's side of bad. Eve was bad, really bad, 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 bad. It had to be piled up to get rid of that old religion that was native to that land. And so that's why we hear only the bad side of the story, is because it had to be used in that way. But you're right, the original stories were more fair and feminine in nature, but I think that's part of the historical reason for why none of us know it, mm-hmm. or why it's...
Well, I think we have to step out of our own cultural context and our own tradition to find that. We have to understand back to the ancient, when God was a woman. And we have to understand and incorporate that somewhat, for me, in order to reclaim my Christian heritage. Yeah. Okay.
I just think a lot of these are in the Bible, too. It's to really know your Bible and read through and not let people just pull things out and use them and then not, and reclaim it all.
That's right.
And to know those stories better.
And that's where coming...
The Christian conference where they changed that story and made it relationships. It was wonderful because they lived in paradise. They said the animals spoke to the humans and got along with everyone. That's why she could speak to the snake. And that it was Adam that started to be more like God. He wanted to be authoritarian and help and make things structured. And Eve was the creative one, wanted to dance and play and swim and play and with her daughters. It was a modern dance, kind of done in dance, and then married.
Oh, what
And they
fun.
Were finally driven out because God said, you're trying to be like me. You're trying to be like God and dictate and be structured. Now go out and you can go out and do it then. Take responsibility.
This sounds delightful. I'd love that. I'm sure I would. Well, just a couple things I want to tell you about, too. I'm, just personal note, I'm working on a project called Lay It Down, Images of the Sacred, and it's going to be a CD and cassette, and if you want more information about that, I'll be happy to tell you about it after class. And also, I'm going to be doing a women's spirituality retreat around Bellingham, which is my home in Whatcom County, at the end of October. So if you want information about any of that, and I also also have about 5 different tapes at the bookstore. Jen?
Comfort.